Have the Bludgers ever killed anyone? Harry asked, hoping he sounded offhand. Never at Hogwarts. We've had a couple of broken jaws, but nothing worse than that. You don't have to worry about the Quaffle or the Bludgers. Unless I crack my head open. Don't worry, the Weasleys are more than a match for the Bludgers. I mean, they're like a pair of human Bludgers themselves. Welcome to the Basic Cinephile Podcast, Season 1, Harry Potter. Everyone, we are your hosts, Ziana and Adelia, and welcome to the Basic Cinephile Podcast. On this season of the podcast, we are reading all of the Harry Potter books and watching all of the Harry Potter movies. And this week, we have a special episode for you. We are doing a deep dive all about your favorite wizarding sport, and really the only one ever mentioned, Quidditch. This podcast contains spoilers, so you've been warned. This series has been out for a really long time now, so if you want to not have anything spoiled, you need to go read all the books, watch all of the movies, because who knows what we're going to end up spoiling in this podcast. And now let's hear from our sponsors and then dive into our very special episode.
Want to rate movies and write movie reviews but have no idea where to start? With the Cinephile Journal, being your own film critic has never been easier. You can log and rate all the movies you watch with an easy-to-use scoring system. The notebook has a mix of guided content and blank space, so you can write on every page and let your creativity flow. There are pages to track every movie you watch, and other pages that ask you general questions about your favorite movies, actors, and directors. This movie journal is a must-buy for every movie lover you know. Just search The Cinephile Journal on Amazon, or you can go to our show notes for a link.
Hello there, my fellow Basic Cinephile fan. Jeremy Hirschhorn of Jet Movement Academy here. In my experience as a gym owner and trainer, I've seen the world start to change. You'll need new strategies to keep your health in top condition. That's why I'm offering Jet Online. This is a complete training and coaching package available wherever you have internet access. Go to jetmovement.com to sign up today or contact me at jeremy@jetmovement.com. Wishing you happy listening and amazing health. Keep moving.
All right, so today we have a very special episode of the podcast. We have a special guest.
Yeah, our first guest.
First guest. So we've got Coach Jeremy Hirschhorn. He is the owner and lead instructor of Jet Movement Academy in our hometown of Bellingham, Washington. He's got 3 decades of athletics experience as an athlete, coach, and personal trainer. And he used to kick Adelia and I's butt in a bowling league back in middle school. Coach Jeremy Hirschhorn, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Man, that was quite the intro. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, you know, Coach Jeremy, we had to give you the props that you deserve.
Absolutely. You know, got to set the tone for the whole episode.
I love it.
Yes. So today we are going to be, discussing Quidditch.
Yeah, we're doing a deep dive into the magical sport and giving all of our, you know, personal hot takes as well as straight up training techniques. So,
yes. So that's why we brought Coach Jeremy on for this episode, because he's got all of the experience training for athletics, how to,
participating in them and all of the aspects of being an athlete.
Yeah. So we are excited to get your professional opinion on this very professional sport.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pumped because I like dreamed of being able to play Quidditch growing up. Like, it was amazing reading the books and thinking about what it'd be like to fly around on a broomstick.
Oh, for sure. I used to think that too. And like, you know, I was not athletic as a child at all, so I don't know why I thought that like flying would change that for me.
Yeah,
because I also have a fear of heights.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the game for you.
No, but I was like, man, if I was a wizard, I'd be an athlete.
Things would change for me. Everything would change.
Yeah.
So if you were to play Quidditch, what position would you play?
So I had a tough time with trying to figure that out. Being an athlete, I like to kind of have the ball in my hand and like be able to like not be the star, but participate a lot.
Yeah.
But I kind of thought that I would want to be a chaser.
Okay.
Trying to score points. But I have such a hard time with the fact that, like, your points don't really count or they don't matter if you don't get the snitch.
Yeah.
So being a seeker would be pretty cool because then you get to be, like, the one that wins the game, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot of imposition. All guts and glory for that one. You're either everyone's favorite or you're absolutely hated. So no pressure for being the seeker.
Yeah, you gotta. Yeah, if you're gonna be the seeker, then you're in trouble if you don't get it.
Yeah, it's a,
you can't have an off day.
It's a mental game.
Yeah.
So are you locked in on seeker then? That's what you would want to play?
I don't know. I can't decide. It'd be fun to score a bunch of points and fly around, but yeah, probably seeker. Getting that last, you know, that last snatch.
Yeah,
seeker is interesting because it's both. Obviously offensive because it ends the game and it is, you know, a bazillion points, but you are kind of waiting it out like the whole game. You're looking around at what's going on. You're, you know, strategizing as to when to catch the snitch. Like if your team is behind and you wouldn't win if you caught it, like you don't want to catch it then, or if at the end of the year you're, you know, losing by some points and you want to come in first, you got to have your chasers, you know, really rack up some points for you.
Yeah.
And then catch the snitch. Like, it's not just boom, go get it. There's a lot of strategy to it.
That would be the toughest part is if you are losing by that much and it wouldn't get you the win to catch the snitch, that would be tough.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that is exactly what happened in the Quidditch World Cup in the fourth book is Victor Krum catches the snitch, but his team loses.
That's
how the Weasleys were getting all their coins, except they got paid in leprechaun money, which was fake, so didn't make that much money. But so it's possible to still lose the game and catch a snitch.
There's a lot of pressure on that one. Yeah. Maybe what position would you play for Quidditch?
See, my response is exactly opposite of yours, Jeremy. I don't want the pressure to score any points. And I also don't want to be the keeper because that's a lot of pressure to, you know, not let anyone else score points. I want to be a beater and just hit things at people and be entirely defensive. Yes. But the problem is, even when I played baseball or fast pitch for a minute, I am terrible at hitting a ball with a bat. Like, it just does not come naturally to me. I can do other sports. That not in the cards.
The beater position is like, it might be the most like varied amount of skills that you have to have, being able to fly around with one hand and have your club and all that.
I just think it sounds fun, you know. Maybe it's just the Weasley twins. They really put, you know, a shiny look on it, you know?
They made it look fun. Okay, yeah. So I used to think that I would want to be a chaser because the points don't matter. That's why that was the position I wanted. I was like, I don't want the pressure. So, but if you're just one of three chasers, then you can kind of fly around, throw the quaffle around, have fun. Mm-hmm. But, like, no one's counting on you.
You're working more as a team. You know, you got other people. So if you have a really bad game, maybe the other two chasers are having a really good game.
I can't imagine a world where I would be the best of three chasers. So I was like, there's no way I'm going to have any pressure. But now I've changed my mind. And I would also like to be a beater. And that's because I actually am pretty, not good, but like I'm better than Edie at hitting a ball with a bat. Like I can actually kind of do it. And I'm so scared of being hit by a bludger that I want to be protected at all times. So I want to be out there with a bat. Like, I want to be able to
strategic
protect myself. Yeah.
It'd be the Weston twins out there.
Yeah.
Exactly. The Bash sisters. Pure chaos. Oh,
absolutely. There'd just be bludgers flying all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Oh, yeah. I would be very reactive in that position.
But it's going to be a good time.
Yes. Oh, my God. Okay. So in preparing,
can't talk today. In preparing for this episode, I did a little bit of research on the history of the game. So we've got a little bit of the origin story of the game of Quidditch. So Quidditch is kind of a combination of several old-timey, old-fashioned sports. Mm-hmm. So it comes from Stichstock, which originated in Germany. And that was played, there was a single wizard who was a goalie, and everyone else had a broom, and they had an inflated dragon bladder, and then the first person to throw the dragon bladder through the goal won. So
first, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so that game seems like it could end pretty quickly if someone was good at it.
Yeah.
And then it also comes from Angengine. That's definitely how you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. That originated in Ireland, and this one sounds kind of fun. They would fly through burning barrels in the air while holding a ball, and then once you got through all these flaming barrels, there was a goal at the end, and then you'd throw the ball, and if you went through the goal, it was whoever scored a goal the fastest won. And then there's also Creothesine, which originated in Scotland. And this one, this is a dangerous sport. Very violent. They said it was often fatal, and they would enchant boulders to like float through the sky. And everyone would get on a broom, they'd put on a helmet, and they would get a cauldron. And when they blew the whistle, all of the boulders would fall from the sky, and the players would have to fly around and collect as many boulders in their cauldron as they could, and whoever had the most rocks at the end won. But that one, if you lose, like, you're probably dead.
Yeah.
So
it's a high boulder fall on you.
It's a high stakes game.
I don't think that a helmet would be enough.
No, I would want my wand if I was a wizard. I need more than a helmet if there's boulders falling from the sky. But they said that's where the bludger kind of originated from.
I see that.
Falling that makes boulders. Sense. Yeah. Then there was shunt bumps, which was broom jousting, and swiven hodge, which was like tennis, but on a broom. So there'd be like two teams on either side, and then they'd have a hedge between them. Then you had an inflated pig bladder, and you would like pass it back and forth. So they said this is part of like how you could pass the quaffle back and forth between chasers. That's where that component of the game came from. So all of those old-timey sports kind of meshed together and created a more modern version of Quidditch. And then the last element of the game that was added was the golden snitch. That was added to the game in 1269 by Barbarous Bragg, who set a bird loose at a Quidditch game. And he said he'd give the player who caught the bird 150 galleons. And it sounded like it caused pure chaos, and people were like pouring out of the stands and like trying to get this bird. But then that's how, you know, it turned into the golden snitch. Eventually they stopped using birds and they gave out 150 points instead of 150 galleons. And that's the origin of Quidditch.
All right, there's a lot of facets.
There's a lot.
So modern day Quidditch, you've got, you know, your defensive player. So you have your seeker who is trying to keep all the chasers from scoring on them. You have two beaters who are going to hit those bludgers around and try and knock off other people, the other team, and, you know, just kind of mess up their strategy. And then you've got the chasers who are using the quaffle. They're flying around, passing it to each other, trying to get past the keeper and score 10 points by throwing it through one of three hoops. And then you've got the seeker who is going to go after the golden snitch and get 150 points and end the game. So that's kind of interesting how you see all the different aspects of how it evolved.
Yeah, became the modern sport of Quidditch.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some questions for you, Coach Hirschhorn, about training. So Quidditch appears to be a sport that would take quite a strong physical toll on your body. So what do you think are, like, what would the training methods be for someone who played Quidditch? They went to the gym. Like, what do they need to be working on?
Yeah. One of the first things that I looked at when I was thinking about that was kind of the vision I had in my head reading the books of what it would be like to just sit on a broomstick.
Yeah.
I have never done that before, and I've definitely never flown through the air on one. But I looked into there's another book that came out that is like movie props, and they have all the brooms in that book.
Okay.
And so I was looking at that, and there's actually like quite a bit of technology involved with the various brooms. So they have like bicycle seats or like foot pegs, and then they're shaped differently to hold on to. So it seems a little more reasonable than I thought originally.
Okay. Does seem better. I know in one of the movies they show Mad-Eye Moody's broom, and he's got like this big like cushy seat on there, and I was like, why don't all of the brooms have
that? Yeah.
Right. Because that's what I was trying to fathom, is like a broomstick between your legs, not a comfortable situation.
Yeah, whether you're magical or a muggle, like that's not gonna be a good time.
Yeah. And that's even if you're just like staying kind of stationary, but these guys are like, they're moving around, and these broomsticks go fast. The Firebolt said it went 150 miles per hour. So
yeah, so you're looking at like your whole body's got to be dialed in. But the thing that I was thinking of the most is called adduction, which is where you're like, if you think about squeezing your legs towards each other.
Okay.
So there's very specific muscles that are responsible for that. So you'd have to be amazing at that, like horseback riding status, just to keep yourself on the broom there. Then you're looking at like pretty extensive grip strength training, because that's probably what I would assume would steer the thing the best, is what you're doing with that end of the stick.
Yeah.
And then your core strength has got to be amazing too, because there's just so much going on. There's stuff trying to knock you off your broom. There's other players trying to knock you off your broom. You're chasing stuff. Like, you're all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have to like throw it to other people. And so like your body's got to be able to like turn and, you know, like you have to really, as you said, like be dialed in the whole time. There's no,
You're reaching, you're twisting, you're flying up and down. Okay. Yeah. There's a lot just to stay on the broom.
Yeah. This is just, this is just flying.
Yeah.
We haven't even added in the sport yet.
Exactly. Like just the idea of, moving a broom around with other players would be pretty extensive. So you'd have to do quite a bit of different stuff. I was thinking I was actually going to try to write up like what I would prescribe, so to say, for somebody.
Okay. So
I was thinking that you would want to do what I would call broom work, which is like stuff on the broom flying around, but then you'd want to do like off broom training is what I'm dubbing it, of like stuff that you would do just to keep your body from hurting, basically.
Yeah. What do you think would be like the main, I don't know how to phrase this question, the main parts of your body that you would be concerned about developing injuries, like not getting bludgeoned in the head with a bludger, but like, I don't know, I feel like my hands would hurt from like holding on to the broom.
Definitely. Yeah. So like you can get like grip strength kind of injuries in your forearms and elbows, and even in your hands, like carpal tunnel and tennis elbow. A lot of those are related to like how your hand functions.
Okay.
So I would imagine that, like, I think of Harry flying through like on that super rainy day, mm-hmm. and it's like freezing cold, and he's just like probably got the death grip going on.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be, high likelihood of getting hurt in the hands and forearms. But then also like your hips from trying to squeeze your legs together.
Yeah.
Your hips don't really want to go that direction very well. So I would say a lot of hip and low back injuries.
Okay. I never thought about that one. Yeah. That sounds really painful.
Yeah. And then you're like hunched over for a lot of it, trying to stay aerodynamic, at least seeker for the most part. Like that's got to be so uncomfortable, since there's not necessarily a time limit on the game. You could be doing this for hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to want to be like trying to sit up straight when there's nothing going on, and like reaching your arms over your head and doing some stretching, and but then you might get blasted with a bludger.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. You're going to want to be like Ichiro out in the outfield, just stretching every chance you get.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's a great reference right there. I would never in a million years thought I would be on a podcast about Quidditch and bringing up Ichiro.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Well, I have to throw in my old school Mariners references with people from the hometown that'll appreciate that.
Yeah, you know I appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay, so yeah, those injuries seem like they would be really annoying. Carpal tunnel, mm-hmm. I feel like, is something that I would be really afraid of developing from playing Quidditch. What do you think, Edie, we talked about this a little bit off the podcast, but what do you think would be your biggest safety concerns just for the sport in general?
Well, the craziest thing is how high off the ground they are.
Yeah.
Like that would be my biggest concern is like, yeah, let's say you're good at it, but you still could easily get knocked off your broom. And then I don't know what happens to you after that. Like you're in trouble. So
yeah.
That would be my biggest concern is how high off the ground they are.
That's a solid concern because there's at least two times in the book where Harry gets knocked off the broom and falls quite far. And it's like there's the time he breaks his arm and then Lockhart debones his arm when he tries to fix it.
And then when the Dementors come and he falls off and
he gets knocked out cold, wakes up in the hospital wing
days later.
I was thinking during those two, I'm like, bro, that it could have been way worse than that. Like the ground must be soft around the castle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there seems to be like no out of bounds. So like they are just flying all over the place wherever the golden snitch takes them basically. So
they're
going through some dangerous areas.
They really are. And my biggest concern is that they just do not cancel it for inclement weather.
No.
Which is like so dangerous.
Yeah.
Especially, they're playing in Scotland, so there's so much rain, and there's one match that's super rainy, and Hermione has to run down onto the pitch, and she does a little jinx on Harry's glasses that basically, like,
wicks away the water.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, this guy's played how many games in the rain, and no one's thought of this?
Well, the kid can't see. Yeah. And, like, they're flying around. There was one game at least where they said that there's like lightning. You are by far going to be the tallest, like highest up thing that is a conductor. I don't want to get struck by lightning riding on a broom way up in the sky. That is terrifying.
As you guys have pointed out pretty extensively in the podcast, they do not really seem concerned for the safety of the children.
No, not at all.
Hogwarts is not safe.
No.
It's the safest place in the world when Dumbledore's there. It's like, well, then why can't Dumbledore put some kind of, charm on the ground where it's like, if you fall to a certain level, then you stop and you, gently land on the ground. That exists. It has to exist.
And if not, we need to be making like a list of spells that like Hermione needs to invent or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you are a parent. Congratulations. You just had another baby, like little tiny baby. So if you were to let your kids play Quidditch, what are some of the safety protocols that you would want to implement at Hogwarts?
Yeah, I think that it kind of parallels where we're at with like football right now, because they're starting to try to crack down on a lot of the, the negative aspects of football. So like better helmets would be a great start. Something to protect their head.
Yeah.
Or just lowering the goals. Lowering the goals would be great. Keep them closer to the ground.
That's such a good point. Even thought about
Why are the goals so high?
Yeah.
There's no point.
I could just imagine them inventing the game and be like, you know what? We should make the goals like 1,000 feet off the ground.
This can go up and higher.
Yeah.
I would say let's make the little kid version 5 feet off the ground. Maybe start there.
You still get to fly around on a broom. That's still exciting. You don't need to be like 5, 7, 10, 12 stories in the air.
Yeah.
12 stories in the air and going 150 miles per hour. Yeah. And you're 13. Like,
oh my God.
And also, what are all the balls made out of? Because, like, even the Quaffle looks hard. So, like, imagine being a goalie and just getting pelted with, like, a wooden ball. Like, no thanks.
No, that seems awful. I was reading about their uniforms, which is one of the safety things I would want to change. Why are they out there in robes and capes? Like, they don't need all of this stuff flying off of them for people to be able to grab onto.
That makes it super hard to move,
and it's raining too, so they're just like waterlogged out there. Like we can't have rain gear for these kids. It doesn't make any sense. But the keeper is the only one who wears a helmet or any type of protective headgear, and then they get kind of like a, I don't know, like a catcher or a goalie in hockey, like a
face mask,
chest
or...
pad kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm trying to remember. The only ones, I can't remember though. The descriptions in the book. I it's been a while since I've actually read through the books. I'm working back through them with my son Jet right now, but I don't remember the description of what they wear. I just remember like when Ron made the team as the goalie, and he had like the rugby helmet and then like forearm pads.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. And he's the only one who would wear that. Everyone else is just like out there in a cape and a sweater.
Yeah.
I don't understand the wizarding world.
No sense. Yeah, the balls could be softer, especially the bludger, since that already has its own like momentum that's flying through the air to hit you with. That could be like a dodgeball or foam or something, kind of a texture. And if that hit you, like that would still have an effect.
Yeah. The bludger itself.
But it's not going to knock you unconscious.
Yeah. It's going to just like crack a rib if it hits you, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's a little extreme.
Yeah.
Especially at this level. This is just at the school level, you know? This isn't a professional Quidditch team. Because I can see, you know, leveling up.
Maybe the pros.
You know,
okay.
You know, you're getting better. You're kind of making it a little bit more difficult. But you're a paid professional athlete. You are an adult. You are not a minor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Harry starts playing when he is 11.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I was going to point out is, like, do they not have, like, at least, like, a JV team that you can play for a little bit?
There's no one to, like, rotate in. Like, that is your team. Like, if you get injured, if you are tired, there's no substituting someone in. They never talk about tagging someone in and be like, okay, Angelina, you're exhausted. Let's change it out.
That's true.
Like,
there's there's seven people on the team, and they all play.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Okay, so that could be a change.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a bench.
Yes. Let's start with a rest period of some sort.
Yeah, maybe we could give them some water occasionally.
Halftime, you know?
Especially in a game that lasted 6 months. There was, like, the longest game in Quidditch history, and they just... We're like, yeah, this is too long.
Oh my God. I can't imagine being competitive enough to 6 months later still be like giving it my all. I feel like after like 6 hours, I would be like, you know what? I quit. I'm fine with losing. Can we go home?
That's a long game.
Yeah.
I just want to go sleep in my own bed right now. It's been a day.
I've been sitting on a broomstick for 6 hours. Seriously. I would like to go do something else. Okay, so those were great suggestions, especially lowering the goals. Did you have any other safety changes that you thought of?
I was thinking of, like, maybe if the snitch wasn't just so crazy. Like, if they had, like, a more mellow version of the snitch, that might help, too.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be metallic gold. It could be something that you have a slight chance of seeing if it's a sunny day.
Yeah, because I remember they're, like, cruising through like the stands, and like it takes them over the lake, and like it's just all over the place.
Yeah, it's out of control.
Yeah.
There's no rules. Also, it could still be really small, but I mean, this thing is like smaller than your hand. It's tiny. So I feel like you could enlarge the snitch and give it more defined boundaries, and it would still be a challenge to catch it.
For sure. Yeah, it was small enough to fit in Harry's mouth, so it's like, how do you even see that then?
It's a choking hazard.
Yeah, I was going to say, he thought he was going to, like, choke on it.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that that is a factor in why there's, like, so few games that they play? Because it's, like, so intense that they've got to have this long time in between games to recover?
Yeah, absolutely. That was what I was thinking about. Like, the schedule is, like, you couldn't be playing this game multiple times a week. Like, you would just be destroyed after that.
No. I think that's the craziest, well, one of the craziest things about the Quidditch season at Hogwarts is that you only play the other houses once. So they're only playing three games.
Yeah.
That
was weird to me, too, because I was like, what happens, like, I don't know, there's flukes in sports all the time where it's like a team just kind of accidentally does something and then, you know, they either win or lose.
Yeah.
So if you only get one shot at Slytherin, boy, I don't know.
it's important. And then you've got the points component. So it's like, that's how they determine who the champions are, is like how many points you acquire. So it rewards that behavior that's usually kind of frowned upon in sports, of just like running up the score incredibly high. And it, what's the word I'm looking for? Like making your opponents look stupid. But I guess in Quidditch,
you're going to want to do that.
You
want to get as many as you can.
Yeah.
It does make every game really important, though. You know, you only get three. So you've got to be so focused and so ready to give it your all, because you don't have like a series to play.
Yeah. And from a fan standpoint, like if you were just watching, that would be, you would just get amped for that. It's like football's kind of like that, where it's like you have a whole week to wait, you know, to the big game. And then it's like you finally get to go and it's exciting, you know, whereas like baseball, you play like four or five games a week, you know, people hardly even really notice half of them. Building up that excitement. Like I can only imagine like the week before Gryffindor plays Slytherin in there, everybody's just like partying all week getting ready for it.
Yeah. That's so true. And like football, how when you're getting towards the end of like playoffs and stuff, it's like every game is important, even if your team isn't playing, because you're like, okay, well, we need to win this game, but also we need this other team to lose their game, and then like we can go forward. So I feel like that is one fun element of Quidditch, is like you could go to all of the games. And if you're in Hufflepuff and the game is Ravenclaw and Slytherin, that game is still important to you, because you're going to have a team that you're wanting to score more points. So I feel like, I don't know, like you're invested in every game.
Do you think that the other two houses that aren't playing are like definitely rooting for whoever's playing Slytherin?
Oh, I mean, there's big let's hate Slytherin energy.
Yeah. They're really easy to hate. But then also, I think that Hufflepuffs are nice, but they're probably going to be going for anyone that's playing Slytherin. I think that Ravenclaw is kind of like, well, who gives us the best odds? If Slytherin kicks butt, like that puts us in a good position. Like, all right, let's do that. So
that's a good call.
That's all I would care about personally. And I'm a Ravenclaw. What house are you in, Jeremy?
I am a Hufflepuff, which I did not realize until I started listening to your guys' podcast.
All right. Are we helping people figure out who they are?
Yes. Because, I mean, obviously when you're reading them, I mean, I started reading the books when I was in, like, sixth grade, I think, or seventh grade. So, like, you don't know who you are when you're that young anyway. So I was like, yeah, of course I'm a Gryffindor, like Harry Potter, you know, all the way. But, no, I think I would be – I think I align more with the Hufflepuff vibe. I'm kind of a Luna Lovegood, I think.
Okay. I see that. Luna's actually Ravenclaw, but
– Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Luna's just a space case, but I love her.
But she's kind of the unexpected Ravenclaw. But I see that for you, because, like, the values of Hufflepuff are teamwork and loyalty and, like, working hard. And I don't know if we really said this yet, but everyone listening, we've known Jeremy since we were itty bitty tiny humans. Grew up together. Our families grew up together. So I've always seen that quality in you. Like you were always, you know, playing baseball and on the sports teams, but you're always someone who like trained really hard and also was someone who always rooted for the success of all of your teammates and rooted for the success of your friends who were on the other team that you're playing against. So like, I definitely see Hufflepuff for you.
Yeah.
A competitive Hufflepuff.
For sure.
Yeah. That kind of is what brings me back to some of, you know, not being 100% sure, is that like, I'm kind of feisty when it comes to like winning or losing, but yeah, it's more about like enjoying the challenge. I like that.
Yeah. Well, Cedric Diggory was Hufflepuff and he was the Hogwarts champion. So like I think you can still be that competitive and out for yourself to win something, but still like overall, yeah, you're not looking for like the fast track to get there. You're not gonna go crazy on steroids to beef up or something. Or, like
expense
of others, that would not be satisfying for you if you like won something because somebody else didn't play their best. I feel like that would probably bother you more than if you had like a really good face off with someone and yes. came out on top.
Absolutely. It's like when Cedric helps Harry because Harry helped Cedric. I would be yeah. like, I owe you one, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That integrity is important.
And I feel like Hufflepuffs kind of get, or at least reading it as a child, and you kind of get this like, dear Hufflepuff, she took the rest. Kind of like you're this afterthought, but yeah. really, I feel like Hufflepuff like gets a bad rap for that. They're so kind and inclusive, and yeah, they can be really smart. They can be really competitive. They can be really like savvy about things, but they just never want to do those things at the expense of others. So yeah. I think that that's honestly, we need more Hufflepuffs in the world.
Yeah, 100%.
For sure. And I think we were introduced into this series at a point where Slytherin has been dominant. And they talk about in the first book how like Gryffindor really wanted to win the House Cup because Slytherin had won it like how many years in a row. And yep. like Slytherin had been really yeah. dominant in Quidditch. So I do think like, I mean, there are a lot of reasons to hate Slytherin with Snape and Malfoy. But if the book had been set like 20 years earlier and like Hufflepuff had been on a winning streak or something, like, I don't know, maybe we would have viewed the houses a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sure. also that's our protagonist. So well, you're like rooting for the Gryffindors.
Yes.
Big time.
For sure. You gotta root for Harry.
I mean, I'm a Gryffindor, but I always wanted to be something else. I always wanted to be like a Ravenclaw or Slytherin, even though that's definitely not me. And then I've taken the test so many times and I'm just always Gryffindor and I'm like, well, great. I, you know, like my oppositional defiance, like I'm just like, I don't want to be what Harry Potter is. That's the main character. I want to be more of a deep cut. Like, no,
yeah.
girl, you basic. Like, so I guess we all have to come to terms with who we are and, you know, accept that just because you're one house doesn't mean that you're exclusively those traits.
Yeah, you can have positive traits yeah. from other.
Yeah, I can hear the sorting hat, you know, trying to figure it out in my head, you know, trying to pick which one.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what makes it so interesting and why, you know, you need all of the houses. You need everyone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So back to Quidditch. What do you feel like are skills that you would learn in Quidditch that would be transferable to like regular life or like school, mm-hmm. different things, both like physically and mentally?
Yeah, I think the toughness is the big one because going to school at Hogwarts would test your toughness on a daily basis. It seems like with
yeah.
teachers turning kids into animals and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you never know if there's going to be a dungeon troll or anything going on. So I think the toughness is the biggest one because you'd have to be both physically and mentally tough just to survive one Quidditch game. So that was yeah. the biggest one that stood out for me.
That's true. That the class schedules that they have at Hogwarts are super tough and like their exam schedules and how tough Snape is on everyone. So that's very true. If yeah, you can handle, if you can handle a Quidditch match, you can handle potions with Snape. You'll be fine.
The dungeons are cold, man.
Oh my gosh. I have things to say about the heating in Hogwarts.
Yeah, you guys talked about that before. They're like, just a couple candles on the walls? Like, let's go.
Like, your magic.
What is the point of magic if you have to be freezing inside your classroom? So cold that you can see your breath. That's yeah. too much.
It's obnoxious.
Yeah, there has to be a way to solve that.
There is. They just actively don't. There is. So there's that.
Yeah. I can see like Oliver Wood having them like jump in the lake before practice and like just be soaked and then go to practice. Just
yes.
He's one of my favorite characters because I think he's like the most competitive person in the whole story. And I just love how much passion he has to be the coach and try to win.
That's so true. He's so hardcore. And I feel like when he's leading the team, he has such a clear plan. And I mean, everyone kind of gets a little frustrated with him because he's so tough on them. But then when you see when Harry takes over the team, I think it's Katie Bell or someone comes up to him and asks, like, oh, when are tryouts going to be? And he's like, oh, well, you don't need to try out. You've been on the team for 5 years. And she's like, dude, you have to have tryouts. This is step one for leading the team. So he's so more like laid back. I'm just like, yeah. I don't know. We'll just like take the team and go run some drills and play. And it's like, you know that Oliver Wood spent all summer like drawing up Quidditch plays and like running drills.
He's been scoping out the first years when they come in being like, okay, this one got potential. Yeah. This one.
Yeah, for sure.
He's not waiting around for later. No. He's planning ahead for sure.
He's a great character. And you see that he goes pro. So
yeah,
that hard work paid off.
I could see him coming back as like the graduated alumni to come watch a game and be like, what is going on out here? You know, like want to get back involved.
Yes. Oh my God. He should be the new Madam Hooch because.
Oh, because she's a zoo.
She's got the easiest job at Hogwarts and she's really bad at it. All you have to do is teach first years how to fly, which from what we saw in the first book, that's like an hour with one group of kids and she teaches them how to fly.
It's like a one-off.
Yeah.
And it did not go well.
Yeah. No, it went horribly. And then you referee the Quidditch games. So what, there's like 12 games? Each team plays the other teams three times?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's 12 Saturdays. What else does this woman do?
New dream job.
Right? Yes. I think Oliver Wood would have excelled at that role.
Absolutely.
He wouldn't just be that, though. He is someone who, like we see, wouldn't be just okay with doing okay or well at something. He's going to push the boundaries constantly. He's going to, you know, institute weird new things and be like, I'm involved in transfiguration because now I'm like, he's going to find a way to insert himself.
I feel like he's going to buddy up to the Lucius Malfoys and like the other parents who are on the whatever board. Like the PTA is for Hogwarts. And he's going to be like fundraising for the Quidditch pitch. They're going to have a jumbotron out there. It's going to be like state of the art. I feel like he would turn Hogwarts into like a professional Quidditch pitch.
Yeah, people are going to be like flying into Hogsmeade for the weekend to come in for these children's sports games.
That's awesome. That would be so cool.
It's Buddy Garrity.
Like he's just going to go entirely too hard, but like it's going to be awesome. Oh, Oliver Wood.
You need to write some fan fiction about this, Sienna. Just...
You pretty much got it ready.
I mean, you have
thoughts.
I am in. Okay, I want to know, and I know Edie has some of these, but I want to know, do you guys have any hot takes about Quidditch? Like just aspects of the game where you're like, what?
Yeah. So one of the things that jumped out at me was the fact that a game can end when the captains make an agreement.
No.
So I did a little dive into the Quidditch myself, and that's one of the rules is that the game ends when the golden snitch is caught or the team captains have an agreement, which I don't really know 100% what that means.
Okay.
But I was like, that's so dicey because like what if there's like secret underground wizard betting going on and they pay off the captains to make an agreement?
Oh, that seems real sketchy. You got to make sure that they're not allowed to place any bets on the games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No investors.
No.
Yeah, the scoring bothers me, like I said earlier, because it's like it's weird to have like two forms of scoring to me. I don't know why. But it's like I guess it's like a 3-point line. It's just a 150-point line. But that was the one that was pretty sketchy to me.
That is interesting. The points thing seems like it could be weird because you know how when you go and watch like elementary school or middle school basketball and the score of the game is like 25 to 23 at the end and it's like that's all they scored in the whole game. I feel like Quidditch would be like that every time at a low level. It'd be like, okay, this team got a 170 points and the other team got 10. Like, I feel like they're going to have a huge spread, but it's just who caught the snitch. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and especially those games that are just like chaotic and physical where there's just, not anybody scoring.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you got 150.
It seems like that would be where the captain agreement might come in. Cause like we were saying, how they don't have a bench of backup players. It seems like you could get to the point where like your team is dropping like flies, like too many people have been hit by bludgers. So if you got to the point where you're like less than half the team is left, you might just shake hands and be like, we just all need to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
That's a good call. Yeah.
Cause other than that, I don't see why you would shake hands. Yeah. Unless you've got some shady side business going on.
I don't know. Maybe like you've been playing for a while and the game's pretty tight and just your seeker is just not doing well. Neither one. You're like, this game's never going to end. So it would be a little bit more like a stalemate of like,
yeah. Can you take a tie?
Yeah.
Oh,
cause that might be worth it.
Cause that game that they talk about that lasted 6 months. That game ended without a winner.
Okay.
So I'm wondering if that's it was just tied and nobody could catch the snitch and they're like, you know what? Let's go home.
Yeah, it's a hurricane now. So let's just shake hands.
The snitch is in a fully different country. We don't know where it is.
Call it a draw.
See you next season.
Okay. Yeah, that seems like a good scenario for shake hands and just walk away.
But you would definitely need a lot of regulations within that to make sure that things are above board.
For sure.
I mean, there's just so much about the game that does not make sense, that you don't have any players to rotate in. There's no JV team. It doesn't seem like there's any sort of like practice to get to this level. It's just like maybe you were flying at your house and then all of a sudden now you're playing Quidditch. Like
and
competitive,
and then you can go straight to the pros.
Yeah,
like Oliver Wood.
Yeah.
Victor Crumb's in high school, essentially, and playing professionally.
Yeah.
Oh, that was one I was gonna bring up. Was like, how did Victor Crumb do both of those? Like, there's no, you know, that'd be like a pro playing for Seaholm High School.
Yeah. that would be strange.
There's a lot of logistical issues with that. You know,
when is the Quidditch season? Is it during the school year? You got to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions I have there.
It just seems like it's a lot. I mean, yeah, then we have this point scoring doesn't really fully make sense. You, I don't know. And the outfits, the uniforms.
Mm-hmm. That's my big one, is the uniform. I don't understand why. When you're flying around, especially if it's windy, you've got this long flowing cape robe thing that just seems impractical.
Isn't the point to be aerodynamic? You want to be faster. Why would you put on like wool and fly around?
And you're essentially like on a balance beam, a tiny little balance beam in the sky, trying to stay on it, and you're moving around a lot. So it seems like you wouldn't want to have fabric hanging off your body while you're like trying to hold on to a broom and then trying to catch the quaffle or trying to like catch the snitch. It doesn't make sense to have all that extra fabric. And then they talk about it raining a lot and they're just like, oh, we were instantly soaked to the bone. And I'm like, we can't throw a poncho on these kids.
We have this, you know, we can, we have muggle technology in order to make this like not the worst.
Yeah. So hypothermia might take you out. That just seems like a ridiculous sport concern.
A lot of danger.
In a magical community.
I have issues with how unfair it would be for people who aren't able to afford the best equipment. So like if you're rocking a clean sweep and you're not able to go fast and you're next to a Nimbus 2000, that's just like not fair.
Yeah.
Like
that's true.
A problem.
There are a lot of sports that are not equitable to everyone, and that would definitely be one of them.
It's just like, I equate it to like NASCAR. If you're, you know, you've got someone that's got their vehicle that's all tuned up, everything, engine good.
Yeah.
Clearly knows a lot about cars.
Engine good.
And then you have somebody else out there that's like on a hoverboard, and they're just like cruising around doing laps. Like that's, technically, you're both, you know, on a moving vehicle, but, like, that's not fair.
Oh, no. You know, you know what they could have done in the movies? You know, like all the 90s sports movies from when we were kids that were like the you know, the underdog team had just like trash uniforms. And then they get the new stuff for the big game.
Mm-hmm. We need like the little
guy. Every movie, like the big green does it. Like Mighty Ducks.
Mighty Ducks.
Little Giants.
Yeah. God, yes. Yes, they needed to get sponsored by Hendrix and get all new equipment.
Yeah.
That's such a good point.
I mean, kind of Slytherin gets that a little bit when Malfoy joins the team and they all get new brooms. Like, but we're kind of expecting that. But I would have loved to see that, Jeremy. That would have been so great.
The training montage that you could have with all of them starting out with their like junky brooms. I'm picturing them like smoking or like kind of flying off in weird directions. Everyone's like Neville when they start playing, like they can barely get on the broom.
Could you like do like some weight training with the broom of like you've got weights attached to it so you're going slower, you know, you're trying to improve your aerodynamics, you know?
Oh yeah, yeah. There you go. That's outside the box right there.
Yeah, that's me thinking.
Someone green light this project. Because we've got a Quidditch underdog story that needs to be told.
Yes.
It's a tale for the ages.
It's Team Hufflepuff.
It makes me think of the little kid. I think it's in Little Giants when he like doesn't know what to do with the cup and he puts it over his face.
Yeah.
Oh man. There's so much room for more movies.
Yeah. They're really let's just keep expanding the Wizarding World.
There's just so many stories within the stories, you know.
Yeah.
I need to know this.
Forget Fantastic Beasts. I don't need it.
Yeah.
But I do need a Quidditch spinoff.
Yeah.
Quidditch underdog.
Quidditch underdog.
Or maybe like isn't there an HBO show that's like football players who didn't necessarily like make the team and they're trying to like get onto a team, but
Last Chance U.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would like to see that. You didn't make the Quidditch team this time around, but like you're working hard. Or like MTV's Made. I want to be made into a chaser. Yeah.
Guys, that used to be my dream. I wanted to be on Made so bad. I don't even know what I wanted to be made into. But
oh, I was gonna ask that. What did you want to be made into? Because I thought about that too.
Oh, I was gonna be a skateboarder. Big time.
Okay.
You know, nice. I wanted to do tricks.
I think I would have done something more like dance. Mm-hmm. Like something.
Cheer.
Yeah, cheer. Like something that I'm not good at now, but like definitely nothing crazy dangerous.
Yeah.
BMX.
No. I was like, I want to be cool. I want something alternative. But I mean, obviously it's the 2000s, so not that skateboarding was all that alternative, but it felt like it for me in Bellingham, Washington.
Sure.
What about you, Jeremy? What were you going to be made into?
Boy, I don't know. I watched that show a lot. I liked the breakdancing one. I remember that one.
Ooh, yes.
That would be outside of my comfort zone, but something that I would think was cool for sure.
Yeah.
You know what? That tracks because like your whole philosophy is about movement. Mm-hmm. And breakdancing is all about like your body moving in ways that you're controlling, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's super impressive, but I just haven't ever had the like confidence to let it loose, you know?
Yeah. It would be, oh my God, the strength involved and the balance, but then also you have to have the style. Mm-hmm. Like, that'd be a good workout.
Absolutely. Such a good workout.
Spin on your head.
You'd be ready for Quidditch.
Yeah.
You sure would.
That's the cross training we need is break dancing.
All right. Well, thank you so much for doing this episode with us. This has been so much fun.
Oh, absolutely. I was so stoked.
Yes. I mean, honestly, we were talking about this, me and Edie were, that we just had so many questions about Quidditch. We were like, oh my God, the carpal tunnel risks, the how do you sit on the broom? And we were like, we got to get an expert. Here. And who are we gonna call? Coach Jeremy Hirschkorn. The Quidditch coach expert.
That makes me so happy that you thought of me for that.
Yes. There was no one else.
Yeah.
You were
top of the list.
Yeah. We were gonna hunt you down until you said yes. Mm-hmm. So it's great that you said yes immediately.
Because
that made our job a lot easier.
As soon as I saw it, I was like, I'm in.
Yes. So where can people find you, Jeremy?
I'm kind of on all the same social media stuff as you guys are. Instagram. I'm trying to get back into the TikTok game a little bit.
Your Facebook. TikToks are funny. I love them.
And then jetmovement.com, jet with two T's.
Perfect. And that's your Instagram handle as well, Jet Movement.
Yeah, I think Jet Movement, Jet with two T's. That's my handle for everything.
Okay. Yeah, Jeremy, we love seeing what you're putting out there. It's really great. I love seeing it in the context of Harry Potter as well, but just seeing how you're just enabling people to live their best life through movement and getting to know themselves and be in their skin. And I think it's just really awesome. So I appreciate that you brought that to our podcast.
Yeah. Thank you.
And anyone listening from the Bellingham, Washington area or Northwest Washington in general, Jeremy's got a gym. You've got the Jet Movement Academy. So you do like classes and stuff, right?
Yeah. I have like small group classes, and then I do personal training. And now you can actually train with me online as well. So awesome. People anywhere.
Yes. Okay. Great. So everyone listening to this podcast right now, if you're just thinking, man, I watch a lot of movies, but I don't work out a lot. It's me. I'm raising my hand. I watch a lot of movies. I don't work out a lot. But if you're looking for a fun way to work out with someone who is passionate about fitness, but isn't like, I don't know, you're not intimidating. That's my favorite thing about your...
You're a Hufflepuff.
Yes.
I'm a Hufflepuff.
If you need the encouragement and the structure and the accountability of working out, I 10 cannot
out of 10 recommend Jeremy.
Cannot recommend Jet Movement highly enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you. Guys. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I appreciate it.